commanded to slay all whom I find in this land without the leave of the Lord of Gondor. But I do not slay man or beast needlessly, and not gladly, even when it is needed. Neither do I talk in vain. So be comforted. Sit by your master and be silent." Sam sat down heavily with a red face. Faramir turned to Frodo again. "You asked, how do I know that the son of Denethor is dead? Tidings of death of many wings. Night oft brings news to near kindred," 'tis said. "Boromir was my brother." A shadow of sorrow passed over his face. "Do you remember aught of special mark that the Lord Boromir bore with him among his gear?" Frodo thought for a moment, fearing some further trap, and wondering how this debate would turn in the end. He had hardly saved the ring from the proud grasp of Boromir, and how he would fare now among so many men, warlike and strong, he did not know. Yet he felt in his heart that Faramir, though he was much like his brother in looks, was a man less self-regarding, both sterner and wiser. "I remember that Boromir bore a horn," he said at last.
"You remember well, and as one who has in truth seen him," said Faramir. "Then maybe you can see it in your mind's eye, a great horn of the wild ox of the east, bound with silver and written with ancient characters. That horn the eldest son of our house has borne for many generations, and it is said that if it be blown at need, anywhere within the bounds of Gondor, as the realm was of old, its voice will not pass unheeded. 5 days ere I set out on this adventure, 11 days ago at about this hour of the day, I heard the blowing of that horn. From the northward it seemed, but dim, as if it were but an echo in the mind. A boding of ill we thought it, my father and I, for no tidings had we heard of Boromir since he went away, and no watcher on our borders had seen him pass. And on the third night after, another and a stranger thing befell me. I sat at night by the waters of Anduin, in the grey dark under the young pale moon, watching the ever-moving stream, and the sad reeds were rustling. So do we ever watch the shores near Osgiliath, which our enemies now partly hold, and issue from it to harry our lands. But that night all the world slept at the midnight hour. Then I saw, or it seemed that I saw, a boat floating on the water, glimmering grey, a small boat of a strong fashion with a high prow, and there was none to row or steer it. An awe fell on me, for a pale light was round it. But I rose and went to the bank, and began to walk out into the stream, for I was drawn towards it. Then the boat turned towards me, and stayed its pace, and floated slowly by within my hand's reach, yet I durst not handle it. It waded deep, as if it were heavily burdened, and it seemed to me, as it passed under my gaze, that it was almost filled with clear water, from which came the light, and lapped in the water a warrior lay asleep. A broken sword was on his knee. I saw many wounds on him. It was Boromir, my brother, dead. I knew his gear, his sword, his beloved face. One thing only I missed, his horn. One thing only I knew not, a fair belt, as it were of linked golden leaves, about his waist. "Boromir," I cried, "where is thy horn? Whither goest thou, O Boromir?" But he was gone. The boat turned into the stream and passed, glimmering on into the night. Dream-like it was, and yet no dream, for there was no waking, and I do not doubt that he is dead and has passed down the river to the sea. "Alas," said Frodo, "that was indeed Boromir as I knew him, for the golden belt was given to him in Lothlorien by the Lady Galadriel. She it was that clothed us, as you see us, in elven grey. This brooch is of the same workmanship." He touched the green and silver leaf that fastened his cloak beneath his throat. Faramir looked closely at it. "It is beautiful," he said. "Yes, 'tis work of the same craft. So then you passed through the land of Lorien? Laurel in Dornan, as it was named of old. But long now it has lain beyond the knowledge of men, he added softly, regarding Frodo with a new wonder in his eyes. Much that was strange about you I begin now to understand. Will you not tell me more? For it is a bitter thought that Boromir died within sight of the land of his home. No more can I say than I have said, answered Frodo, though your tale fills me with foreboding. A vision it was that you saw, I think, and no more, some shadow of evil fortune that has been or will be, unless indeed it is some lying trick of the enemy. I have seen the faces of fair warriors of old laid in sleep beneath the pools of the dead marshes, or seeming so by his foul arts. Nay, it was not so, said Faramir, for his works fill the heart with loathing, but my heart was filled with grief and pity. Yet how could such a thing have happened in truth? Asked Frodo. For no boat could have been carried over the stony hills from Tol Brandir, and Boromir purposed to go home along the Entwash and the fields of Rohan. And yet how could any vessel ride the foam of the great falls and not founder in the boiling pools, though laden with water? I know not, said Faramir, but whence came the boat? From Lorien, said Frodo. In three such boats we rowed down the Anduin to the falls. They also were of elven work. You passed through the hidden land, said Faramir, but it seems that you little understood its power. If men have dealings with the mistress of magic who dwells in the golden wood, then they may look for strange things to follow. For it is perilous for mortal man to walk out of the world of this sun, and few of old ever came thence unchanged, 'tis said. Boromir, O Boromir, he cried, what did she say to you, the lady that dies not? What did she see? What woke in your heart then? Why went you ever to Laurel in Dornan, and came not by your own road, upon the horses of Rohan, riding home in the morning? Then turning again to Frodo, he spoke in a quiet voice once more. To those questions I guess that you could make some answer, Frodo, son of Drogo, but not here or now, maybe. But lest you still should think my tale a vision, I will tell you this. The horn of Boromir at least returned in truth, and not in seeming. The horn came, but it was cloven in two, as it were by axe or sword. The shards came severally to shore. One was found among the reeds where watches of Gondor lay, northwards beyond the infalls of the Entwash. The other was found spinning on the flood by one who had an errand on the water. Strange chances, but murder will out, 'tis said. And now the horn of the elder son lies in two pieces upon the lap of Denethor, sitting in his high chair, waiting for news. And you can tell me nothing of the cleaving of the horn? No, I didn't know of it, said Frodo, but the day when you heard it blowing, if your reckoning is true, was the day when we parted, and I and my servant left the company. And now your tale fills me with dread. For if Boromir was then in peril and was slain, I must fear that all my companions perished too, and they were my kindred and my friends. Will you not put aside your doubt of me and let me go? I'm weary and full of grief and afraid. But I have a deed to do, or to attempt, before I too am slain, and the more need of haste, if we two halflings are all that remain of our fellowship. Go back, Faramir, valiant captain of Gondor, and defend your city while you may, and let me go where my doom takes me.
For me there is no comfort in our speech together, said Faramir, but you surely draw from it more dread than need be. Unless the people of Lorien themselves came to him, who arrayed Boromir as for a funeral? Not orcs or servants of the Nameless? Some of your company, I guess, live still. But whatever befell on the North March, you, Frodo, I doubt no longer. If hard days have made me any judge of men's words and faces, then I may make a guess at halflings. Though, and now he smiled, there is something strange about you, Frodo, an elvish air, maybe, but more lies upon our words together than I thought at first. I should now take you back to Minas Tirith to answer there to Denethor, and my life will justly be forfeit if I now choose a course that proves ill for my city. So I will not decide in haste what is to be done. Yet we must move hence without more delay. He sprang to his feet and issued some orders. At once the men who were gathered round him broke up into small groups and went off this way and that, vanishing quickly into the shadows of the rocks and trees. Soon only Mablung and Damrod remained.
"Now you, Frodo and Samwise, will come with me and my guards," said Faramir. "You cannot go along the road southwards, if that was your purpose. It will be unsafe for some days, and always more closely watched after this affray than it has been yet. And you cannot, I think, go far today in any case, for you are weary, and so are we. We are going now to a secret place we have, somewhat less than 10 miles from here. The orcs and spies of the enemy have not found it yet, and if they did, we could hold it long, even against many. There we may lie up and rest for a while, and you with us. In the morning I will decide what is best for me to do, and for you."
There was nothing for Frodo to do but to fall in with this request, or order. It seemed in any case a wise course for the moment, since this foray of the men of Gondor had made a journey in Ithilien more dangerous than ever. They set out at once, Mablung and Damrod a little ahead, and Faramir, with Frodo and Sam, behind. Skirting the hither side of the pool where the hobbits had bathed, they crossed the stream, climbed a long bank, and passed into green-shadowed woodlands that marched ever downwards and westwards. While they walked, as swiftly as the hobbits could go, they talked in hushed voices. "I broke off our speech together," said Faramir, "not only because time pressed, as Master Samwise had reminded me, but also because we were drawing near to matters that were better not debated openly before many men. It was for that reason that I turned rather to the matter of my brother and let be Isildur's bane."
"You are not wholly frank with me, Frodo."
"I told no lies, and of the truth all I could," said Frodo.
"I do not blame you," said Faramir. "You spoke with skill in a hard place, and wisely, it seemed to me. But I learned, or guessed, more from you than your words said. You were not friendly with Boromir, or you did not part in friendship. You, and Master Samwise, too, I guess, have some grievance. Now, I loved him dearly, and would gladly avenge his death, yet I knew him well. Isildur's bane, I would hazard that Isildur's bane lay between you, and was a cause of contention in your company. Clearly it is a mighty heirloom of some sort, and such things do not breed peace among confederates, not if aught may be learned from ancient tales. Do I not hit near the mark?"
"Near," said Frodo, "but not in the gold. There was no contention in our company, though there was doubt. Doubt which way we should take from the Emin Wheel. But be that as it may, ancient tales teach us also the peril of rash words concerning such things as heirlooms."
"Ah, then it is as I thought. Your trouble was with Boromir alone. He wished this thing brought to Minas Tirith."
"Alas, it is a crooked fate that seals your lips who saw him last, and holds from me that which I long to know. What was in his heart and thought in his latest hours? Whether he erred or no, of this I am sure. He died well, achieved some good thing. His face was more beautiful even than in life. But, Frodo, I pressed you hard at first about Isildur's bane. Forgive me. It was unwise in such an hour and place. I had not had time for thought. We'd had a hard fight, and there was more than enough to fill my mind. But even as I spoke with you, I drew nearer to the mark and so deliberately shot wider. For you must know that much is still preserved of ancient lore among the rulers of the city that is not spread abroad. We of my house are not of the line of Elendil, though the blood of Numenor is in us. For we reckon back our line to Mardil, the good steward, who ruled in the king's stead when he went away to war. And that was King Earnor, last of the line of Anarion, and childless, and he never came back. And the stewards have governed the city since that day, though it was many generations of men ago. And this I remember of Boromir as a boy, when we together learned the tale of our sires and the history of our city, that always it displeased him that his father was not king. How many hundreds of years needs it to make a steward a king, if the king returns not? He asked. Few years, maybe, in other places of less royalty, my father answered. In Gondor 10,000 years would not suffice. Alas, poor Boromir, does that not tell you something of him?
It does, said Frodo.
Yet always he treated Aragorn with honour. I doubt it not, said Faramir. If he were satisfied of Aragorn's claim, as you say, he would greatly reverence him. But the pinch has not yet come. They had not yet reached Minas Tirith or become rivals in her wars. But I stray. We in the House of Denethor know much ancient lore by long tradition, and there are, moreover, in our treasuries many things preserved. Books and tablets writ on withered parchments, yea, and on stone, and on leaves of silver and of gold, in divers characters. Some none can now read, and for the rest, few ever unlock them. I can read a little in them, for I have had teaching. It was these records that brought the Grey Pilgrim to us. I first saw him when I was a child, and he's been twice or thrice since then.
The Grey Pilgrim? Said Frodo. Had he a name?
Mithrandir we called him in elf fashion, said Faramir, and he was content. Many are my names in many countries, he said. Mithrandir among the elves, Tharkoon to the dwarves. Olorin I was in my youth in the west, that is forgotten. In the south, in Carnos. In the north, Gandalf. To the east I go not.
Gandalf, said Frodo. I thought it was he. Gandalf the Grey, dearest of counsellors, leader of our company. He was lost in Moria.
Mithrandir was lost, said Faramir. An evil fate seems to have pursued your fellowship. It is hard indeed to believe that one of so great wisdom and of power, for many wonderful things he did among us, could perish, and so much lore be taken from the world.
Are you sure of this?
And that he did not just leave you and depart where he would?
Alas,
yes, said Frodo. I saw him fall into the abyss. I see that there is some great tale of dread in this, said Faramir, which perhaps you may tell me in the evening time. This Mithrandir was, I now guess, more than a lawmaster, a great mover of the deeds that are done in our time. Had he been among us to consult concerning the hard words of our dream, he could have made them clear to us without need of messenger. Yet maybe he wouldn't have done so, and the journey of Boromir was doomed. Mithrandir never spoke to us of what was to be, nor did he reveal his purposes. He got leave of Denethor, how I don't know, to look at the secrets of our treasury, and I learned a little of him, when he would teach, and that was seldom. Ever he would search and would question us above all else concerning the great battle that was fought upon Dagolad in the beginning of Gondor, when he, whom we do not name, was overthrown. And he was eager for stories of Isildur, though of him we had less to tell, for nothing certain was ever known among us of his end. Now Faramir's voice sank to a whisper. But this much I learned, or guessed, and I have kept it ever secret in my heart since, that Isildur took somewhat from the hand of the unnamed ere he went away from Gondor, never to be seen among mortal men again. Here, I thought, was the answer to Mithrandir's questioning. But it seemed then a matter that concerned only the seekers after ancient learning. Nor, when the riddling words of our dream were debated among us, did I think of Isildur's bane as being the same thing. For Isildur was ambushed and slain by orc arrows, according to the only legend that we knew, and Mithrandir had never told me more. What in truth this thing is, I cannot yet guess, but some heirloom of power and peril it must be. A fell weapon, perchance, devised by the Dark Lord.